Hello, and welcome to the second episode of where we are diving into school-based occupational therapy and artificial intelligence. In this episode, I am joined by Teresa Fairfield, an occupational therapist who is on the forefront of incorporating AI into the profession of OT as the Chief Clinical Officer of Early Markers, a company that is using AI to develop a home-based mobile app to detect early risk indicators for cerebral palsy. It is pretty crazy. I definitely recommend checking it out. You can learn more about it over at earlymarkers.com. In addition to her role at Early Markers, Teresa has an extensive background in pediatric OT and as a clinical assistant professor of occupational therapy at Baylor University. I've known Teresa for almost 10 years now. It's hard to say that, like, 10 years ago feels like yesterday, but she has done so much, and I've just watched her career develop over these last 10 years. And when I found out that she was working with Early Markers, I was just kind of blown away because I never heard of an OT working alongside of a quote-unquote tech startup. So very cool to have her joining us today. This episode is a very special one in the sense that it was originally recorded live on YouTube back in March of 2024, this year, if you're listening to it recently. Because of that, you might hear us refer to some listener questions near the end of the episode. If you would like to watch the episode on YouTube, we have added a link to the show notes over at otschoolhouse.com/episode147. You're getting the same content here. It'll be a little bit more edited here because it's not live, but if you want to have that picture with the audio, you can head on over to YouTube and find it there. And one last thing before we get started, did you know that you can earn professional development hours for listening to the OT Schoolhouse podcast? Yep, that's right. Members of our OT Schoolhouse collaborative community can earn unlimited certificates of completion by listening to the OT Schoolhouse podcast and displaying their learned knowledge with a simple quiz. To learn more about the OT Schoolhouse Collaborative and to start earning your professional development hours for the podcast episodes you already listen to, head on over to otschoolhouse.com/collab. That's otschoolhouse.com/collab. And with that, let's dive into how AI may revolutionize school-based OT in the future and the impact it is already having today. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast, your source for school-based occupational therapy tips, interviews, and professional development. Now, to get the conversation started, here is your host, Jason Davies. Class is officially in session.
All right, I see the chat is working. The chat is definitely popping up. Hello, hello. I am refreshing the YouTube page just to make sure we are good over here. It is good. And we are just going to go ahead and get started. Whew. I see so many people here. I think we had 40 people, 48 people waiting just before we got going. But I see Billy. I see Marcia. Thank you for being here. Christy Calliope, a member of the OT Schoolhouse Collaborative. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate you all. And as you know, today is all about school-based occupational therapy and the use of AI in school-based occupational therapy. This is a very special live episode of the OT Schoolhouse podcast. And in case you're wondering, a replay will be available both right here on YouTube where you're watching it now. And we will also be releasing this as a podcast episode for the OT Schoolhouse podcast as its own separate thing, probably in about a month or so. So stay tuned for that if you want to catch it again in audio format in between schools number 1, 2, and 3. So with that, let me go ahead and we're going to dive right into it. I'm going to introduce my fellow colleague here, and I'm actually going to bring her on the screen right now so we can bring her on. You can all meet Teresa. And there's Teresa with a lovely smile. I actually met Teresa several years ago now in the middle of a sensory integration and practice test course, going through the USC WPS program when it was still a thing. She was just a friendly, friendly hello, friendly face. And we went through like 4 classes together over the span of a year, got lunch several times together, and just had a good time learning together, just like we are doing today. And so if I can really briefly introduce Teresa to you all, Teresa is a clinical assistant professor of occupational therapy at Baylor University. She's been in that role since 2021 and is affiliated with Early Markers, a Seattle-based computer vision startup whose work in machine learning and infant motor development is building an app-based tool to provide AI-supported early screening together with parent coaching and education. So you can kind of see why we have her on today. She is like with this, she's working alongside this AI-based program to basically support infants and infant motor development. The smartphone app is poised to improve screening access to areas underserved by skilled early interventionists. And over her nearly 30-year career, Teresa has specialized in neurological development through the lifespan to include early intervention and infant motor skills, as well as neuromotor conditions, adulthood, and neurodegenerative diseases. And she's also SIP certified, which again, that's where I met her as well. So Teresa, how are you doing today?
Oh, very excellent. It's nice to have so many people that are interested in the AI space. And, you know, it's an exciting topic. So let's get started.
Yeah, you know, and this is definitely something that is exciting. It's extremely new. We're kind of, I like to say, in like the Wild West of AI. It's AOTA has not even had time to kind of publish any sort of guidelines. As many of you know, I participated in an AOTA forum chat, whatever you want to call it, live with them about a month ago. And that was just so awesome. We had 4 of us on there to just kind of talk about what we're seeing in the world of AI. And I kind of was the pseudo school-based OT there for that. It's just amazing. We're seeing so many different use cases of AI. And I think that's just kind of the best place to start here today. We'll get into some Q&A, everyone, if you're listening. We'll do some Q&A later. But we're going to start this off by just letting Teresa share a little bit about what she has seen within the world of AI. So with that, Teresa, share a little bit just kind of what you have seen out there with AI and occupational therapy in general.
Absolutely. So to begin with, let's just talk about what AI is and maybe places that we're already using AI and might not even know about it. That's probably a good place to start. So AI is a family of computer systems, really, that's aimed at solving problems that could include learning, problem solving, decision making, all kinds of pattern recognition on a high level. And it includes things like branches of AI, like predictive AI, which is where you're using tools to actually predict an outcome, or such as, you know, scanning data and seeing, you know, can we predict a specific outcome based on these large format data streams? Or what we as consumers are probably more familiar with, which is generative AI. And that is AI that is has been trained on resources that generates data that is similar to, but not identical to, those resources. And those are things like ChatGPT and some things that I know that you've played around with. So in that sense, we have both sides sort of represented, in that, you know, my research in early intervention is really the predictive AI. Can we use an AI tool to identify those infants that would benefit from a full occupational therapy assessment or a full team assessment by early interventionists? So, you know, it's in nobody's interest to replace the team with AI assessment bots. However, we do know that we have a pipeline issue in the field, and, you know, identifying the infants that, you know, would benefit, that are missing their milestones, that have a certain number of motor markers that would likely qualify, could help really unclog that access issue. And when we started out this work, it was shortly around the time when I met you, Jason, around 2014, 2015. We were using tools like, well, at that time, it was the camera that was on your Microsoft Xbox that was, you know, detecting humans in play. And our team used some of those same tools to, you know, begin research and say, okay, can, you know, that was designed with a certain use case, being adults, being, you know, in the gaming world, and can we use that same technology and see if it can identify an infant or a child? And because that was sort of, you know, not a use case it was designed for. And turns out it performed beautifully, but it didn't resolve the issue of access, because of course, not everyone had a, at that time, not everyone had an Xbox in their home. And, but, you know, the technology that was running on that platform, nobody has an Xbox, you know, Kinect in their home now, because, you know, the technology that was available then is now available on everybody's smartphone. Even older smartphones are capable of, you know, producing body pose imaging that can, you know, detect an infant and what the infant is doing with very high accuracy. So that being said, there's, you know, there's this space of AI, but there's also this space of digital health, which is, you know, related, can be AI informed, but, you know, not necessarily as explicitly research or documentation, but how do we use data to solve some of healthcare's challenges? So yeah, that's where it's really exciting and really fun to talk about.
Yeah. And I think most of us, when we think of AI, right, we think about what you mentioned that I've talked about, which is mostly ChatGPT, maybe what's it called? Copilot, I think, is the one that Microsoft is officially going with, or Gemini for Google. We think about, you know, interacting with a chatbot, but you've opened the door. Like, there's so much more to that with machine learning. I think we're going to spend most of today talking more about like ChatGPT and whatnot, because I think that's what's accessible. But before we dive really into that, the other side of things, are you seeing any of that in school-based OT as of right now, or in any pediatric OT for that sense, other than the project that you're working on?
Well, not necessarily in the clinical space, because again, we're working on validation. So the tool is built, we've looked at hundreds of infants, we're doing what's called supervised machine learning. And that means that you And we had OTs be early intervention OTs involved with what's called setting the ground truth. So you observe thousands of video snippets, you label them, and then essentially train the computer what you as a clinician are observing. So in that sense, you can label it both quantitatively as well as qualitatively. If we think about aspects of motor skills, we have both quantitative and qualitative data points in any motor activity. And so by training that label set, then you can deliver it to videos and content that it has not seen before. And it can, you know, detect those same movements, those same motor markers on the untrained data set. So, but really, when we talk about that predictive AI, I think the important part for clinicians is to understand that clinicians are the ones doing that work in association with the programmers and software engineers, because you know, they know the code, but they don't know what they're looking at. So it's very much a collaborative exercise. And really all the things that we'll be talking about have even the GPTs. So a GPT is a generative, stands for generative pre-trained transformer. So, you know, you are giving it data to learn from and then asking it to generate something new from that. And that's where the, and there's many GPTs that do that, including ones that are specifically focused on medical health issues, like Hippocratic AI is a health GPT, and it's been trained using actual nursing and healthcare providers, so that it's not just programmers that are delivering this content. It's not just, and I think it's important to kind of pull back the curtain and make sure that people know that, A, there's seats at the table if you're interested in this work, because they need us to produce a product that's relevant. And they need our insights in terms of understanding what the problem is that we face.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just trying to think of some like use cases and throw some out for me. Like, obviously, I think people understand the GPTs because we can use those to generate goals. We can use this to generate, we'll talk more about this, but goals or treatment plans, evaluations, help us to write up notes and all that good stuff. But the other side of it, what do you see as some pie in the sky 10 years from now activities that will be supporting us on a daily, weekly basis? Just, you don't need to go into detail, but just, you know, things that we know of already today.
Absolutely. I think that what it makes possible is for us to be spending our time on not only where we want to be spending our time, which is clinical decision making, and, you know, but it's a nice decision support tool in terms of, you know, how do I triage this issue? And that, you know, kind of materially comes into some of those workload, caseload discussions that I know you have on your platform quite a bit, in that, you know, not just what can we take off of our plate as, you know, we're spending more time doing activities that are not value added direct to the client, but also what becomes possible in terms of things that we haven't thought about yet. And that's some of the conversations that I've had in the digital health community is, you know, we don't have, you know, calls going out to families. We don't have, like, there's a lot of sort of connection between school and home or clinic and home or environment and home. Like, there's a lot of connection that doesn't exist because we don't have the ability to, you know, perform that ourselves. And that's where we can look at a chatbot and you know, the language support is really, really taking a giant leap forward. And, you know, we can expect that, you know, all of those gaps in communication could potentially be closed.
Mm-hmm. All right. I have a hypothetical for you. How long would it take me potentially today, or I don't know if it's not possible today, to potentially create something where I upload a student's writing sample and AI is able to quote unquote grade it on legibility based upon maybe letter size, spacing, placement, all that good stuff? Is that something that could probably be produced with a GPT today?
Yes. And certainly with, you know, certainly with image detection. Now, your GPTs that you're using don't have that sort of image data bank. But, you know, again, if you train it, here is the range of typical, then whether it's handwriting or motor milestones, a computer is going to be able to, you know, very closely identify, here is your normative band. And we already have that with our OT assessments that, mm-hmm. you know, they're moving towards, you know, look at the PDMS-3. It's, you know, it's all online scoring. So, you know, and the Bot 3 coming out soon near you, within the next few years near you, is all computerized scoring. And so it's really a very tiny jump before you'd be able to just scan in sheets and receive data. And in that sense, like, the, you know, I saw a comment pop up about clinical reasoning. And of course, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about that as well as the ethics of some of these scenarios. But, you know, again, we already have the, it's not the actual delivery of the counting the number of below line letters, like, that mm-hmm. is not where our skill is necessary. You know, mm-hmm. that is a very mechanical task that can be performed by, you know, a trained individual of any variety to mm-hmm. say, okay, how many, you know, mixed case letter formations do we have in this student sample? That's not where the skill exists. The skill is in, you know, all of the aspects that affect handwriting, everything from, you know, seating, postural control, you know, all of those things. And yeah. And similarly to some of the conversations, you know, even looking at vestibular equipment, like the swing is not the OT. The OT brings the OT. The swing is just a tool. And, you know, anybody can put the kid in a swing and they're not performing OT. So I think it requires us to really focus in on our clinical reasoning skills as well as perfect our ability to communicate them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny that you bring that up, the whole idea that like, yeah, AI can score an assessment, but so can just about anyone who can read the manual and go through, like, especially standardized assessment. It tells you exactly what to say, right? Like, I mean, we can put a ruler over the circle and see if the circle is cut. Like, you don't need to be an OT to determine if it's cut within 1/4 inch of a line. And that could save us a lot of time that we could be spending with teachers, spending with parents, spending with kids, giving them the information that they need, or walking them off a cliff because AI told them something wrong and we need to clarify a little bit. But yeah, there's so many ways to utilize this to give us more time, honestly, which is very important. Let's talk about ethics, not just necessarily related to school-based OT, but just in general. What are some things that maybe we should be very aware of when it comes to AI as it currently is today?
Absolutely. Certainly, I think and as an educator, there's a lot of, and talking with other educators, there's a lot of initially sort of reactive response to how do we keep our students from using this? And that's really not a sustainable approach because it's a tool. It has the ability to improve your quality of life as a clinician and as a student. And again, like, equity in the space is important too. And so, you know, I feel like AI has the ability to bring so many good ideas to the forefront. But really the onus is on us as individuals to declare that we've used AI. And you can, you know, you can submit a manuscript to a peer-reviewed journal. You can give it a draft. You can, and you can indicate and are expected to indicate where AI has been used in the development of that manuscript. So that's already happened in the American Medical Association journal, where, you know, it is assumed that with these large language models, we have the ability to improve our sentence structure. We have the ability to, you know, look for sort of holes in our argument and then buttress them. And it's important to understand that our results are still our results. Those are things that, you know, we achieved based on our human invention and innovation. And if we use a large language model for refinement of our results section, and we declare that, you know, that is widely acceptable within evidence-based practice. So again, the AI is not generating data. That's outside of its role. But it does have the ability to, you know, as Amy's mentioning in the chat, it does have the ability to improve the professional writing voice and, you know, assist you as the author from taking something from potentially unpublishable to publishable levels. And it's a declaration. And again, we, as all of the ethical responsibility is on the user to sort of normalize, you know, I use this tool in the same way that, you know, you would have used Microsoft Word embedded grammar checks 10 years ago.
So, but what if we get out of the idea of formal manuscripts and whatnot? What if we're talking about our daily treatment note or an evaluation that we're completing, whether it's school-based or in a hospital? We use ChatGPT just because we gave it the bot scores and it was able to summarize that a little bit quicker, honestly, than we could. Do you think at that point, is it becoming a norm to say, you know what, this report includes AI generated content, or is this separate from manuscripts?
Well, I think that's where we probably should go, in the sense that if you, and again, 5-10 years ago, if you were using the online scoring software of the bot, it produced a report for you.
Yeah.
From your data alone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we did that all the time. You could print short form reports. You could print long form reports after only having given it the bot data. Now, the issue is, it's very clear that you didn't write that, right? That's coming from the bot company, from the assessment company. So, and I think the challenge, I never really used a lot of those reports because they weren't parent friendly. They weren't parent centric. They weren't at an appropriate reading level for the parent. And again, you can use the large language model AI to set whatever reading level you specify, which has, you know, an incredible opportunity for health literacy, but it's still, the onus is still on the therapist to ensure understanding, to provide education, to provide generalization and relevance. But again, it really starts to shape what is the skilled service. Mm-hmm. The skilled service is the assessment. It's not necessarily the manual scoring, and it's the interpretation of the results. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is something that, this is why we're having the discussion, because this isn't set in stone yet. AI has only, I mean, ChatGPT opened the doors like a year and a half ago. So this is all new. AOTA is still trying to figure out where to go with guidance. At the OT Schoolhouse, I am definitely using AI, and I know many OTs are. Someone mentioned in the chat earlier, one of the tools that they use is magicschool.ai, which is, it's AI designed for teachers, really, and related service providers, but it's really more geared toward teachers and admin. But I know that OTs are using it for the same purpose. I don't think anyone fully knows how to, quote unquote, cite AI out of maybe the more formal manuscripts. Like, people are still trying to figure that out, the same way that everyone tried to figure out what to do when Google took over the world. Like, you know, this is a tool that we are trying to use. Now, we obviously need to talk a little bit about HIPAA. In the schools, we also have FERPA, which is basically just the educational version of HIPAA. But what are some things that we should know in relationship to AI when it comes to HIPAA and or FERPA, because they kind of go together?
Absolutely. I think it's important to understand how large language models work. And the computer is, if you test it, it does not give you any revealing information about how it has learned what it has learned. So in that sense, and that's why there's some gray area around some of the lawsuits that have already come into ChatGPT and other large language models, because it is if you ask it if it knows this, or if it knows a particular thing or a particular person, you know, there's filters in place that say, I am not able to do that. I do not provide that information. If you ask it about, you know, Winnie the Pooh characters, or to write a story involving Winnie the Pooh, you can detect that it's probably heard of Winnie the Pooh before, that mm-hmm. it's been trained on a Winnie the Pooh story. But it's not in the sense that you can Google a specific name and sort of deep dive and find out more information. It doesn't give you specific information about an individual, a case. That being said, does it have the official stamp of HIPAA or FERPA approval? I don't think so, but mm-hmm. you shouldn't be feeding it client-specific data anyway. What you should be using it for is describing the scenario. I am a school-based occupational therapist. I am working with a client that's 6 years old with the following challenges. Here's what I have in terms of findings. Mm-hmm. You know, help me write a summary paragraph or a concluding paragraph. Help me develop notes for my IEP meeting. Like, it can do all of those things, but you have to set up the scenario. It's not so easy. And I think one of the challenges is that we go into Google and we put 4 or 5 search terms up there and we expect magic to come out. And, you know, it's a garbage in, garbage out system. So if you, you know, the more time you sort of describe the scenario and what you want it to do, then the better your outcome, better your output.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the right goals. I'm seeing that.
We'll get into that, Crystal. We are going to get into goals in a little bit. We're trying to do more of an overview first, and then we're going to really dive into the specifics. So I really do want to ask you, because I know the HIPAA, FERPA ethical areas is the main, it's the main holdup for a lot of reasons, right? Like, I think that OT practitioners are the most ethical people in the world, to be honest. And like, we really want to make sure that this is safe for us and our clients. And so, when we are using AI, say I'm using ChatGPT, say I'm using Copilot, what should I assume is the default to them keeping data? I mean, like, if I type in a student's name, is that name going to be in there forever? Is it going to learn off that name? Do we not know? Do we know? Like, what should we assume, I guess, when we're using AI as far as data collection?
I think anytime you put something into your system, you should assume that you have lost control of that information. I think that's just sort of standard practice now. And that's why a lot of, like, I just listened to a Mayo Clinic speaker, and they have set up, and they're working a lot in the area of mobile health. But they have identified that in order to do that, and they're working on relationships around the world with clinics on every single continent. But as a result, they are saying we are only using our own data, our own internal data. They are not sending it out. They are not sharing it. They have locked it down in what they call a behind the glass model. So, you know, you can look in on their data, but it's not coming and it's not leaving the system at all. So I think, you know, I think it's reasonable to expect. And again, I have a presence on the internet. You can Google me and things pop up. And, you know, I think a lot of us do, particularly when we're working in these innovative spaces. But you have to kind of assume that if you're entering details, that they are going on a computer somewhere that you don't have control over. So that's why it's really important that you're sort of cutting and pasting things and that those things don't have explicit information in them.
Yeah. And I mean, I go as far as just using pseudonyms. I just default to using John for everything. Like, John is a fourth grader who can do all this, please help me with John. So that's one way to definitely do it. I know some programs, I'm assuming Magic AI or Magic School AI, but I know Everability, I believe it's called, they were able to basically partner with ChatGPT and certify that they have HIPAA compliance. And what that meant was that they can basically guarantee that the inputs you give it are not being trained. I don't want to say it wrong, but they can guarantee
stored.
Yeah, it's basically being deleted. And so there is a way to go about making sure that you do use a HIPAA compliant or a FERPA compliant. I believe FERPA is more difficult because I don't think there are, like, FERPA. It's a government agency that just doesn't do a whole lot. But if something's HIPAA compliant, you can almost kind of assume that it's FERPA.
Yeah, the higher stringent.
And
one way around that, and of course, in our research, we're using videos of infants, so we have been up one side and down the other with the IRB around security of the data, safety of the information, and one way that you can do that is that all of the identifying information stays local on the device, i.e. local on your laptop or your smartphone, and none of it actually gets transmitted to the cloud, or it's encrypted by the time it goes to the cloud. so that in our situation, when the parent takes the video of the infant, the video stays on the parent's phone along with, you know, 4,000 other videos the parent has taken of their infant. But when they're, what they're uploading to, in our case, Amazon Web Services, is just the data, around the movement. There's no video showing the child's image. There's no protected health information of the child's name or date of birth. So it's all sort of, you know, locally processed. And that's another thing that mobile health companies are focused on, is how to do more sort of processing on the device itself, so that the only thing that goes out is encrypted data that cannot be tracked back to an individual.
Yeah. I think that's part of the reason that I know, what's his name? The, is it Sam Altman? No, I don't know. The guy who owns ChatGPT, like, he is trying to mass produce a bunch of the chips that are required for AI, because it's just, computers are going to need those chips in order for us to process AI, I think, in the future, which, it's just crazy. But anyways, we mentioned ethics, we mentioned HIPAA, FARIPA, all that good stuff. Are there others, or are you seeing other challenges or misconceptions surrounding AI that are maybe preventing not just OTs, but just in general healthcare use of AI? And is there anything that we can work to overcome?
I think, you know, all of the people that are with us today live, all of the people that are going to be watching this recording are, I think, absolutely in the right place to be on the forefront of this, because, you know, you're here to find out more. And certainly there's early adopters, and then there's people that we're bringing along behind us that, you know, when this is on everybody's phone, then they'll begin to start and pay attention. But I feel like, again, there needs to be more presence in OT. But there's so much sort of interdisciplinary focus on these issues that I think learning more, keeping your ear out. One thing that's interesting is that when you're thinking about what is possible in the healthcare system, one thing to be aware of is that it might be possible, but one of the biggest challenges within the system is how they communicate with each other. And currently they don't. And so that's one of the biggest issues, is that if you show up at an ER in another country, they don't have access to your Fitbit data. Your provider doesn't have a way of moving your, you know, heart rate information easily into your medical chart. The EMR companies are not speaking with each other. And so we tend to think that these things are possible. And they are, but it's still extremely siloed where these things are taking place. And so a world where all of this data is available to improve our lives as practitioners, as well as consumers of healthcare, we're just not there yet. And that's the biggest hurdle. It's not the innovation, it's connecting the existing systems we already have.
Interesting. All right. Let's dive into being more specific about school-based OT. We've kind of touched the surface, but let's dive into it here. I'm using AI. I know many other people have already mentioned they're using AI. What are some of the most common uses that you're hearing of school-based OT, pediatric OTs using AI? I'm assuming primarily GPTs, but yeah, what are, just list them off.
Absolutely. I would say primarily the large language models, because again, that is some of the heaviest lifting of our job, is writing goals, updating materials. Some of the EMRs and the IEP software have really restrictive sort of text boxes and really restrictive. And so, you know, it's really a helpful tool in that regard. there isn't a lot of innovation in pediatrics in some of the predictive modeling. Again, ours is really unique, focused on infants, but there's not a lot of it that is looking at, like you described, just automatic scoring of, you know, fine motor work or work product of the child. And again, that's only one tiny little thing that, that OTs are doing, but gosh, if it were easier, it would be a big game changer, right? But, you know, they're not being designed with a pediatric population in mind. And so I think the text generating solutions are going to be the most high value. Because again, think about how many times you would even just like having an outline. I need an outline to provide a teacher some, you know, self-regulating activities and, you know, all these scenarios in which, you know, you could produce really customized sorts of content for teachers, for parents, for other, you know, conference submissions. You're you're still needing to provide all of the data that goes into those, but you know, I think that's really going to alleviate some of our biggest pain points.
Yeah, I mean, to be like, I don't know. I'm waiting for the day that WPS says, here's a $10 a month, or probably closer to $100 a month subscription to access our WPS bot that has all the data on all of our assessments, and you can ask it anything. Like, I know it's coming. I'm sure they're in the works of it. It's got to be. But yeah, I think that, like, for me, we have what's called the OT Schoolhouse Goal Bank, and I'm absolutely using AI to take my goals. And based upon my goals that I have used over time and even goals that others are submitting, we're saying, all right, AI, here's the goal. Please turn it into a template. And it's turning that into a template. So now we are using it as a goal bank. And from there, I can say, okay, well, if this is my goal, what might a baseline on an IEP look like for this goal? And so now it's creating a draft baseline. And from there, I can ask it, okay, well, what about accommodations? What accommodations might be able to support a student with this goal? What type of services might be able to support a student with this goal? And, you know, just like with everything else, I mean, you think about evidence-based practice, right? Evidence-based practice is not going out, finding the research, and replicating the research. That's research. Evidence-based practice is reading the research, learning about the research, taking what you know about the patient, what you know about the environment, the school, and all that, and deciding for yourself whether or not that research, that evidence actually makes sense for your case. And I think we all obviously have to read anything that comes back from AI with a grain of salt for the exact reason you said, right? Like, it doesn't have all the knowledge that we think it might. Like, it hasn't read everything in the world. I know it's read a lot, but it hasn't read everything just quite yet. So yeah, that's just one example that I can think of for school-based OTs is the goals.
Absolutely. And very similarly, like if you have any ethical quandaries about using an LLM to generate your goals, it's the same process as using a goal bank of, you know, here's all, and you know, I did that for years. Here's goals I've already written, and saving myself some time, you know, you reflect or you copy and paste and then modify, you know, like those sorts of old school techniques we've been using for years. And do you need as a therapist to modify if you're taking this description of what a sensory seeker means and sort of translating it for another child and another scenario and another SPM score? Absolutely. But it's a very similar process of, you know, taking a goal bank or, you know, finishing a document that you felt really proud of and saving it for later as a template. And, you know, this is very much like that, where you're, you know, needing to sort of reduce your sort of cognitive load, if you will, as a school-based therapist, because, yeah, you know, the other things you need to be responsible for are tremendous. And,
yeah. Yeah. So when you're using an OT, a school-based OT, right, they just had a full day of seeing clients and whatnot. And how can they remain that maybe they're jumping on ChatGPT to ask it for some support with treatment strategies? They want to plan their next week treatment plan. How can they ensure that interventions are remaining client-centered and individualized for each student?
I think that's, you know, I'm paying as much attention as I'm able to the chat, but that was one thing that I saw earlier is you can't just give it demographic information. You can't just say you have a child and a diagnosis and expect it to know what that child looks like, because, you know, again, there's other aspects that are client-centered that it will not provide. And so, you know, the more sort of context that you can add or that you can come up with, including, you know, in preparation for this today, I gave ChatGPT-4 some prompts about coming up with a treatment activity of a 4-student group focused on social skills. And, you know, here's the reading level. I want it to be about 3 minutes. And so, you know, we're focused on basic social skills with, you know, around the prompt of what are you doing this weekend? And, you know, it produced line by line script that, you know, the students could practice with each other in sort of a skit sort of way in terms of role play. And I think, you know, even just taking that activity, which I just kind of threw up there to play with, it just shows you, you know, things that you could produce. I've seen a lot of things happening in the social stories. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that content, it's easy to, it's actually the most fun part of social story building, to which I've done a lot of, to do, you know, take the pictures or the video snippets, to actually work with the child and family over what social stories are necessary, or with the teacher in school-based cases. And then have the large language model just punch out what, you know, what script needs to accompany that. And the, you know, language generating tools are they're improving at an incredible rate. They currently, like all of the text-to-speech still sounds a little bit robotic, but I just listened to some this weekend down at Stanford, and it's pretty undetectable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing where we're going. And so I do want to definitely keep time for some Q&A. And so I kind of want to get into some quote-unquote maybe rapid fire. If you were working on this right now and you had ChatGPT open, what would you do? All right, so situation. You're working on an evaluation. You've got some data in front of you. You are working on maybe your interpretations at the end of your results. How are you going to ask ChatGPT for some support?
Me, or are you asking the chat?
No, you. I want to know. Yeah. So what might you? I mean, everyone can play it long. Absolutely, feel free.
Absolutely. Well, what I would do first of all is I would upload a de-identified sample of something that I had already written. Right. This is me. This is how Teresa sounds when she writes a report. And, you know, these are some of the contents you can, and then you can ask it to use that as the model. So then it takes everything that it's learned, but it's specifically just learned from you individually. And I think that's an important part, since, you know, you want it to sound like you. Mm-hmm. And then you, I think a good place to go would be to describe what you're trying to achieve. And it's the same thing I would tell my students, actually. Who's the audience for the work?
Yep.
Is it a teacher? Is it a parent? What's the reading level? What's the vocabulary? Are there any terms that need defining? You could kind of assume that chat would know a lot of these terms because of the model it's been trained on. But if there's any sorts of vocabulary or jargon that you're using. Obviously, you can't give it any direct quotes. You'd be doing some of that editing afterwards. I find when I'm doing that sort of thing, even just having a text to start with, it's much faster. It's much easier to edit something than start with a blank page.
Yeah. I have found that, especially, I don't know, I use ChatGPT mostly. I don't use Copilot or Gemini, but I found that ChatGPT likes to use the word delve. I delve into something. So if you see the word delve, I would question if it's AI. Like, that's just my personal. I don't know. Maybe you're catching something else. But either way, you need to edit. Whatever it gives you, you need to edit it. You need to make sure it actually sounds more like you. What Teresa said was a great idea. By uploading your own work to it, it is being trained on you or on your words. But still, usually you got to edit it just a little bit. All right, so that was evaluation. Go ahead.
Do you want the prompt I actually gave ChatGPT?
I mean, if you want to, go for it.
It says, I am an occupational therapist working in the school system. I am working with a group of 15-year-old students with level 2 autism that have difficulty with appropriate social communication. I'm interested in setting up a role-play activity where peers will read a script that models the appropriate interactions between students. I'd like you to provide the script for a group of 4 teenage students with a 3rd grade reading level. The scenario should involve the 4 teens sitting at the table at lunchtime, asking each other what they like to do on the weekend. The scenario should take about 3 minutes. Please provide the script.
Yeah. And I just also put up a chat comment up here from Heather, and it should be easier to read now that I changed the formatting. But this is basically what Teresa just did. She gave it a role. She gave it context. She gave it action. She gave it formats and constraints. You really want to do that. I mean, a lot of us just want to give it a quick sentence and expect it to give us something amazing. That's just not the way it happens. I mean, like, it's almost like trying to tell you to do an evaluation as an 18-year-old before you have any OT experience, and then telling you to do an evaluation once you have the training, once you've taken OT 501, 502, 503, 504, all those classes. Now you have much more information available to you. So yeah, absolutely. Got to make sure we prompt it. All right. So that was a little bit about evaluations and also a little bit of treatment planning there. What if you wanted to, let's see here. What if you wanted to find out a support that might be helpful for a student? How might you interact with AI?
In that case, I would provide some similar to, you know, what just got posted. What's the context? What's the length? What's the complexity? How many steps? For example, you know, one thing that I haven't tried, but I am excited to see some folks in the chat that have already hopped over and tried it for the first time. How fantastic is that? Glad to have you jumping in the pool. And, you know, again, you can just use name. You can just use a placeholder. But again, the ideas come from you. And that's where if you give sort of an idea, it can come up with some ideas. The relevance of those ideas may not be that helpful. But I think for like student-centered, like here's where you could use it to buttress your, you know, let's say you're not so skilled on the Pokemon characters, right? You know, you could ask the chat to generate a game involving 5 Pokemon characters and, you know, 3 rules that could be played in 10 minutes or less. And again, you're providing the bumpers on that activity. But, you know, think about your time savings if Pokemon is not your jam by asking sort of those specific sorts of questions.
Yeah. All right. We're going to dive into some Q&A right after this last question, but I just kind of want to prompt everyone. Thank you so much for being here. First of all, we are going to actually post into the chat a link to get a certificate of attendance for being here. So stay tuned for that. But I want to ask you for one thing, and that is to please let me know in the chat what you most want to learn about AI now that you've attended today. Like, what is the one thing that you wish that you could snap your fingers and tomorrow you would just know how to do? Please leave that in the chat for us. And with that, I'm going to ask Teresa, if you could snap your fingers and tomorrow a tool was built for you related to AI, what would that be? Hopefully related to OT, but who knows?
Yes, I think, you know, again, my vision for the project that we're working on is so huge. And we've done so many focus groups with parents in early intervention. I know some of you are working with littles as well. And there's so much opportunity for also sort of supporting the clinician and the parent with like a micro consult. And so my vision is that, you know, that parental sort of anxiety or caregiver anxiety around development is resolved with a combination of machine learning insights, a beautiful parent education platform, and an entire, you know, team, an armada of occupational therapists that could, you know, provide sort of micro consult support that puts in a meaningful way to really resolve some of our, you know, equity and access issues around early intervention. And, yeah. You know, as we know, even as school-based therapists, you're seeing kiddos later on after that early intervention window is closed. And, you know, what if they had access to all 3 years of birth to three services? Like, what would their school experience look like?
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of already mentioned mine earlier, so I won't go too much into it, but it would be like a tool that just literally can tell me the exact legibility of this writing and then also some strategies to move forward. But to whoever just gave us a thumbs down and then changed it to a thumbs up, thank you. I appreciate you. And to anyone else who wants to give us a thumbs up, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. So I've got some questions here, and feel free to also add a few more to the chat. We might have time. The first one that I want to cover is, which AI platform might you recommend for getting started? We talked a lot about ChatGPT. Is that your go-to?
That's my go-to. I have decided personally that a Chat4 subscription is worth my investment as a clinician. I feel like, you know, certainly try around with the free tools and see what might be possible. And then, you know, you can have in terms of a free trial, you can compare what 3.5 gives you, what 4 gives you. And keep in mind, there's also a bandwidth issue. Sometimes you'll come to it and it will sound really impaired in terms of its response. Slow. And then, you know, and again, keep in mind that this is essentially a crowdsourcing issue. We're all going to one well, and when more of us are trying to get our problem solved, it can get a little murky in there. But play around. And again, keep in mind, it is a computer. The more you give it in terms of guidance, the more it's going to help you out.
Yeah, exactly. I found that, I mean, you really have to learn how to prompt. And a lot of people are asking for prompt goals or for prompting help. So we'll have to come up with something for that. But Crystal asks, does it write goals? And I want to get your take on, I don't know if you've used it much to write goals. I obviously talked a little bit about it earlier, but your concept on that.
Yeah, I think it can write goals. Again, if you give it parameters and, you know, maybe a nice supplement. Jason, you and I are talking about more ways to intersect on this content. So I think something that would be fantastic is to provide some more sort of prompt specific support. And maybe, you know, some case study resources that you can put out to your members and subscribers about, you know, how to begin shaping this tool for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I've got another question here from Amy. Amy, thanks for joining us, an alumni of the OT Schoolhouse podcast. I'm trying to put it on the screen right now. Self-determined kids shout out. Finding research articles that I need on a particular topic. Have you explored anything with that? I've used Consensus, which is an app out there. What have you used?
Yeah, I think it's great. The issue is that there's still, these products still need funding. So, you know, all of the places that we get our articles still need financial support. So libraries are getting them and they're paying for them. And, you know, you still have to go to for a library. And ChatGPT will not help you get out behind a paywall. It is absolutely blocked from providing. Can it help write code? It can absolutely help write code, but it will not help you write code to get behind a paywall. So it does have some ethical boundaries for itself as well.
You know, that's interesting because I'm a big daily listener of the podcast, and they've had journalists talk about this exact topic. And while they couldn't get it to like recreate the article, well, I should take that back. Someone did, but then they shut it off because of that. But one way that people were getting around it was saying, write me an article about this topic in the voice of said journalist. And it did know that journalist's voice, and it knew what that journalist knew. So then it just recreated a journal that was very, very similar. But yeah, very interesting how things are working
out. I would say, though, that anything it would create does not have the peer-reviewed rigor of something that's actually published in the journal. And that's, you know, remains the hallmark of evidence-based practice is the peer review process, not just the writing one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, it is 3:59 my time here in California. I think we're just about to wrap up, unless there's any pieces of the comments that maybe you wanted to address really quickly before we say goodbye to everybody. I know they were going by fast, so...
They were, and I only got a sense of them. But you know what I love is that it's an active community, and they're generating great ideas and support for each other. That's absolutely fantastic, and you know I hope to be back again at some other point in the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. And Marcia, to answer your question about consensus, it's basically AI for research. You type in a question and then it searches research for your answers and will cite the research that it is giving you an answer based off of. So yeah, there are so many tools out there. Like, I feel like we just need to put together a cheat sheet on different tools. Maybe we can get that together in the near future. But yeah, thank you everyone so much for being here. Really appreciate it. We had over 400 people registered for this, 200 people nearly that attended today. Obviously, AI and school-based OT, AI and OT in general, is just a huge thing. We are in the very beginning phases of this. Be sure to look out for information from myself, for information from Teresa about AI. Really quickly, Teresa, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, learn more about you, find you somewhere on the interweb without asking ChatGPT, where can they do that?
You can Google me. Like I said, I am known to the internet, and I am available at Teresa_Fair-Field@Baylor.edu.
Yes. Geralyn called you TFF. I don't think people will find you that way, but maybe we need to start calling you TFF or T-Fields. I like T-Fields. All right. Anyways, Teresa, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for joining us so much. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time on the OT Schoolhouse podcast. Take care, everyone. Good night.
All right. And that is going to wrap up this very special episode with Teresa Fairfield. Thank you all so much for listening. I really hope you appreciate this. I hope that this episode helped you to kind of understand AI as a tool as opposed to something that we should fear and is going to take off or take over all of our jobs. In fact, I was just looking up an article, and it's actually in the Canadian Journal of Occupational Therapy from 2018, so several years ago before AI was really a thing. And they kind of talk about how AI isn't really a threat to overtake the role of occupational therapy practitioners. However, AI is going to make it harder for many of our clients, the people that we work with on a daily basis, to keep up with some of the work demands. And I think this is going to be huge for our youth today. They're really going to have to learn how to use AI the same way that so many of us had to learn how to use Microsoft Word, learn how to use Google Drive, and how to use Google search terms to find what we wanted to find, what we needed to find to get through our daily lives over the last 20 years. And I really think that that is important. We can't just, you know, ignore it. We need to embrace it and figure out how we are going to use AI in practice the same way that we might use Google, or we might use Google Drive, Microsoft Word, Canva, all those tools that we do use every day. So thank you again so much for listening. And if you would like to earn your certificate of completion for listening to this podcast, be sure to check out the OT Schoolhouse Collaborative. That's at otschoolhouse.com/collab. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the OT Schoolhouse Podcast. For more ways to help you and your students succeed right now, head on over to otschoolhouse.com. Until next time, class is dismissed.